It is time for another journey deep into the lining of the magical talking hat. Hat wranglers Tony and William reach into the yawning chasm that is the hat and pull forth the questions you have posed. Will they tire of your question quickly? Is your name Azhatalin? Then perhaps they will, but then perhaps not. But that will remain a mystery until we venture into the magical talking hat.
So, I happily and with great relief discovered I have been drinking way too much kombucha.
Too much?
Yes. Hmm. That's actually a really funny sentence to most people.
Well, I didn't think you liked it much, so how could you? I mean, maybe it doesn't take much, I guess.
No, it does, but I was drinking a lot. So, have I talked about this on the podcast? I don't remember if I've talked about this on the podcast.
You talked about how you kind of have only just started. You really just tried
I tasted
it
and I didn't like it. It's very vinegary. And it's gross. I'm very big into, Trish and I both are very big into gut biome and stuff like that. And she likes reading up on the research of it. And every day, like, it's crazy how many things we are unaware are apparently tied to our gut bacteria and what it's doing. And most fermented foods, they're harder to come by. And like, I like sauerkraut. I like kimchi. I don't think I would eat either of them like multiple times a week. It's a little insane. So, you know, trying to figure this stuff out. And so doing kombucha, and it's kind of gross, but there's a bunch of different brands.
Right.
And so I found another brand. I did talk about the Better Booch. And it had four flavors. And when I tried the first flavor, I still did not like it. But I didn't like the flavoring. It wasn't the kombucha-ness of it. And it wasn't terrible. It had a floral taste that was a little perfumey tasting to me that I didn't really enjoy. I drank it, but it's fine. But I tried the others, and I found out that of the remaining flavors, one is so-so, and two of them are actually not bad. And so I drank those, and I got a few more, and I drink more of them. And kind of got a little into, I like fizzy drinks. I mean, I don't like sparkling water, but I like fizzy drinks. And pop is awful in every capacity. Like, even the diet stuff has issues with artificial sweetener, but also just so much stuff in all pop, you know, has the phosphorus and all. It's not great. So I try and limit that. So I think that may have been, I was sort of drinking more of that and whatever. So one day I have to go to the store. It's not my normal shopping day, but I had to pick up a couple of things. And I was like, why don't I get a few more? And this is the week I can start doing like one a day. And I started the night before. I was just going to have it in the evening. It's a nice, I tuck Trish in and I just sit back and I sip that while I watch my TV. It seems nice. It's good. But when I went this time, I actually paid attention to how much they cost.
Oh.
And I'm not very good at that in general. And with the deposit cost, they were just over $3 each.
Oh.
So doing it daily would be just a little under $22 a week.
Yeah.
For something that I'm not 100% sure is doing anything. And I just sat down with Trish, and Trish was, we talked about it, and she's like, I mean, if you want to do it, that's fine. I can't really tell. And I said, no, I didn't come to you for a decision. What I'm hearing from you is I trust your judgment. And she's like, yes. I'm like, all right. So I thought about it, and I was like, well, honestly, I don't know what the recommended amount is anyway, so let me look into that. In the meantime, I bought them, whatever, but let me look into this. And so I look into this. And I look into it the way I look into most things nowadays, is I Google something and then I open like the first 5 or 10 tabs and just read them. I do this with recipes a lot. It's like, oh, I want to make chicken noodle soup. All right, chicken noodle soup recipe. And then I just look at a bunch of them and they're like, okay, this is kind of what it is. And then I'm like, but so I do this and they are all over the place. First of all, everybody agrees on a couple of things. One, that it really varies from person to person.
Sure.
And two, that it is very wise to start slow.
Oh.
Because you don't know how your body's going to react to sure. all these new bacteria.
I mean, stuff. Yeah, that makes sense.
And also, at least most of them agreed. Some of them didn't, but some of them were clearly insane. But most of them agreed you can do too much and it doesn't, it's not like going to kill you, but like it'll give you headaches. It'll give you all sorts of intestinal thing and excess gas and stuff. And I had actually had a couple of these symptoms that the way I live my life can come up anyway, but I was like, this is probably why it's come up recently. And so I'm looking at more and more and more, and I do finally hit on one particular thing. The CDC has weighed in on kombucha.
Oh.
It's tricky. I found a site, because the problem is kombucha is one of those things that people will tell you cures everything.
Mm.
And I found a really good site that was like, let's go through all the things they supposedly cure, and I'll talk to you about the research that's been done on those things. And some of them, there's actually indications that, again, the gut biome stuff, there's indications that's really useful. The fighting cancer stuff, jury's still kind of out. The right. detoxifying, I actually skipped that because anytime people talk about detox, I'm like, fuck off. Unless you are, if you are just using the word toxins, I do not want to hear from you. Tell me what these things are specifically that you think shouldn't be in my body and that you think this gets out of my body.
Right.
Then we can start talking.
I agree with that.
Yeah, there's all sorts of things like this. But I find out in this one that the CDC has weighed in on kombucha. As per usual, the CDC has weighed in a very specific way. What the CDC has said is 4 ounces of kombucha per day probably won't hurt you.
Oh.
And that's it. For the record, these cans, 16 ounces. And I have been on occasion drinking two a day. Now, to be fair, I mean, there's lots of people who drink more. And some people, I've found, to my shock, drink it all the time because they genuinely like the taste. I don't fully get that. At best, it was fine, but whatever. But I saw a lot of things talking about between 4 and 8 ounces a day was like a good sort of starting point. And will most likely produce benefits in terms of bacterial stuff.
Sure.
And when it happens is also a big factor, which I felt like an idiot. They were like, so there's various pros and cons to different times a day. First thing in the morning, a lot of people like, because there's a pH issue, like too acidic an environment and the bacteria are going to die off. And in the morning, before you've eaten breakfast, is generally when your stomach is the least acidic because it hasn't been making stomach acid because you haven't been putting anything in there. When you start eating for the day, your stomach starts bringing more of that in. They also pointed out evening, not so great for some people because it is still tea and therefore has caffeine.
Oh.
And I was like, oh shit, yeah, maybe I shouldn't have been drinking that right before bed. Maybe that's why I haven't been sleeping so good. So I think we've discussed before, a very big thing of fake caffeinated Crystal Light in the morning. And it's my morning caffeine. And it's also a bunch of water, which I like. Previously, if I did pop or something like that. So this is also very hydrating, which I like. And I was like, I can dump half a cup of kombucha in there. So currently, that's what I'm doing. And actually, on my little, I got plastic cups from the gas station that I use for my big drinks. You've seen them on them.
Yep.
I measured a half cup into it and I marked it with a Sharpie for the future. And it's pretty fine. And based on this, I would need approximately 2 cans a week. And that's actually a little more than I need. So that's a much more manageable expense.
Sure.
We'll see how that goes. It's also one of those things that builds up over time, like any sort of culture situation, like the bacteria create more bacteria. And I read things talking about that and how a little bit often is probably more useful for building up bacteria than a whole bunch every once in a while. Because I had thought about that too. I'm like, what if it's like one can, but it's twice a week or something? But no, apparently just a little bit at a time. So I'm pretty pleased with that. Trish kept saying we could make our own because you totally can. But it sounds like effort. I don't like it. So yeah. So I'm, I guess, a kombucha boy. And then we're going to Oregon soon. And Trish is like, what are you going to do in Oregon? And I waited for a beat because I thought she might be kidding. But she didn't seem to be. So I said, you're right. Where the heck am I going to find kombucha in Oregon?
Of all places, yeah.
Right? And she's like, no, but I mean, you got to go find. And I was like, yeah, no, the store. It's at our grocery store. It's probably at most Oregon grocery stores. So I am not concerned about that. Hello, everyone! Welcome. The Magical Talking Hat Podcast. The only podcast that genuinely came up with a bit for this like 10 minutes ago and already forgot it.
Oh, you already forgot your bit.
I did. It wasn't very good, but I remember being like, that'll do, but I don't remember what it was. So okay. I'm Tony.
And I'm William, and this is episode 628.
Is it? Oh, my guess was off. I thought this was 629. But you're looking at it. And also, that is your one job. So
I'm looking right at it right there.
All right. All right. For those of you just joining us, it's the kombucha hour. No. I always say, for those of you just joining us, Maggie's the last new listener we've had. And before her, it was no one for like 7 years.
Yeah.
Anyway, if for some reason you are just joining us, here's how this works. We have first of all, the easy way, go to the blog, themagicaltalkinghat.com, and click on about, and it'll have what I'm about to say. We have a hat. It is magical in that it has its own email address, themagicaltalkinghat@gmail.com. People, maybe sentient plants, I don't know. Write into that email address, themagicaltalkinghat@gmail.com, with whatever the crap they want. And then the hat magically forwards them to us. We read them on the show, talk about them. That's pretty much it. I have a question for you. What's the deal with airline food? No, that's not my question. You have a lot of hats. You scared of the top of your, I don't know. That has been consistently the hat you wear while recording this podcast for quite a while. You haven't really been mixing it up. What's that about? Not that this is not a complaint. This is a curiosity.
Well, I mean, I just got this hat in August. And before that, I wore Iowa, I think a University of Iowa hat.
Yeah, that one came up.
For a very long time.
In my memory, you used to, like, it would be sort of a different hat each week. But I think I'm thinking back to when you used to come over here.
Yeah, I would.
That might have been different.
I would change it up when I went over there sometimes, yeah.
So, but as a rule, though, you have, like, your current hat, and it's just your current hat for a while?
I don't know. I mean, so the hat thing started when I was a kid. And I want to say it started when I was watching Captain Kangaroo, and he had a hat rack with a whole bunch of different kinds of hats on it.
He did.
I saw that and I thought, oh, that would be cool. And it because you could like, you could.
I just realized Captain Kangaroo was like your jam, wasn't it? Like Captain Kangaroo was like your children's programming.
Sesame Street was.
Really? All right.
Oh my gosh, yes.
Sesame I mean, Street. I watched all of them. I watched all of them, but.
Oh, I did too. I watched, you know, Mr. Rogers' Neighborhood and whatever else.
Gun to my head, actually, I think mine was 3-2-1 Contact. I really dug 3-2-1 Contact. And not so much for the science, but for the, like, I liked any show that, like, had teenagers because I thought they were cool.
Electric Company was a big thing when I was a kid, too. But Sesame Street was definitely the thing I liked the best. And I liked everything about it. I liked the Muppets, obviously. But I also liked the general... I mean, now I would call it a hippie vibe, you know? Oh, we're all friends. Yeah. We all get along. That there was lots of diversity in the cast, not just in the cast that was like in the fake neighborhood, but like in all the videos, there was different types of people. Sometimes things would be in Spanish, you know, it was amazing. I loved it. But yeah, I watched Captain Kangaroo.
Josh, I want to say Goldstein, the guy who plays Roy Kent on, and I don't think it's Josh, maybe it's Brent Goldstein. I don't know. The guy who plays Roy Kent on Ted Lasso was on Sesame Street recently.
Oh,
and I have seen YouTube tossed me one and then the other videos of him. He's essentially playing Roy Kent. He never gives his name, but he's doing the Roy Kent voice and the Roy Kent grunt. You should watch them. They are awesome. One is about playing games with friends and one is about sharing, and they are awesome.
Yeah, Sesame Street was great. But I watched Captain Kangaroo and he had this thing with a bunch of hats on it. And I saw that and I thought, wow. So if you had, and I always wanted a hat rack like that, and I've never had one, that I could put a whole bunch of hats on. And then I could do like one-man sketches where I would change hats to play different characters, right?
Yeah.
This was an idea I had when I was like, 6 or something. And to this day, I don't have a thing like that, and I would still like it. And I know I always wear ball caps, but for a long time I did like ball caps. I've always liked ball caps, but for a long time I was really more interested in just completely different styles of hats for that reason, right? Because I don't want to cover that. If I ever get a hat rack like that, I'm not going to cover it with ball caps. I'm going to have a top hat, and I'm going to have a bowler hat, and I'm going to have a deer stalker.
Well, you have a collection I have seen.
Right. So that's, and so as I was growing up and, you know, I would travel or I would go places with school trips or whatever, if I could find a hat store or if I found a store with hats in it, like the deer stalker I finally got was in Lake Placid. I was in Lake Placid and there was, I bought my deer stalker there. So
famous Sherlock Holmes location, Lake Placid.
And when I, of course, when I was in what was then the Soviet Union, man, there was lots of hats there. So I bought plenty of hats, the whole fur hat thing, you know, a rabbit fur hat that was stereotypically, you know, Russian or whatever. I bought one of those and boy, I don't even know what happened to that. I got a bowler hat there. So yeah, for a long time, I wanted a whole bunch of hats like that because the point was they would represent different personalities or characters or whatever. But I do like ball caps and I do have a lot of them. And, you know, ball caps are good, not just, you know, to keep the sun out of your eyes or whatever, but ball caps always have something like on the front that's really cool. You know, a superhero logo or, you know, this is the butter cow and the Iowa State
Fair. No fat chicks.
No, not that.
I mean, I bet you there is one.
But
they don't always have something cool on them.
That's true. But I that's where it started. It started, I was watching Captain Kangaroo and I saw that hat rack and I thought that would be fun to have a rack like that, to be able to do like a sketch or something and just change the hats for the characters. When I was real little, I thought of that and I became sort of a hat collector from that point forward. I think most people who knew me growing up knew that I did that, and I looked for hats and bought hats and collected them. And that's why when we did our video version of the hat.
No.
I'll spoil the illusion if I. Magicians never give away. You're
the worst.
give away their secrets.
One time we did videos where you saw the hat and we just used a bunch of Williams hats and we just had them in stacks on either side so that whenever we passed it back, it was a different hat. And now it's ruined. Now all the little children that gather around the laptop to watch the show and think the hat is real. Yep, there's no fucking Santa Claus, everyone. Williams has ruined it for everybody. William has brought coal to all of our stockings.
It's really funny that you're
different hats the whole time.
It's funny you should say all this because when I was a puppeteer, you know, it was really most of the things I did was for kids, right? So you had to be really careful when you were showing up at the venue or whatever to not let the kids see what you were doing or whatever.
Your box of corpses.
Oh yeah, I remember that.
I love hats. I have always wanted to get into hats, and I have tried a few times, starting again when I was very little. When I was five, I went to Europe, and at the super tacky I Heart London like souvenir stands or whatever, you could get these kids' bowler hats that were made out of, I don't know exactly, it's a material you would find a lot of cheap stuff. It's sort of like felt, but with the consistency of very thin cardboard. It's the cheapest shit in the world. I wore that hat the whole trip and for years afterwards, and it got beat up as hell. But it was a bright red bowler hat with like a London on the brim or something. And I wore that thing all the time. But I've tried in college. In high school, I got, you'll know this because you're a state fair nerd. At the state fair, there's always a booth that's selling those real leather Australian hats where you, because there's a wire in it, you can like push it up on one side and stuff.
Yep.
I had one of those, wore them all through college. But it just never clicked exactly. But I think I'm going to have to again because I recently got my haircut again. And I mean, I'm already at the point where I can't be going out this summer without something. And I do have a couple of sun hats, but I'm not going to be one of those, once I finally do shave the head when it gets too crazy, I'm not going to be one of those who's hiding the fact that I'm bald under a hat all the time, like a lot of people do. But I will definitely need to wear hats more often. But I'm not a baseball cap. I've owned a few, but I'm not a baseball cap person. And when I have owned them, I was always the one that turned it around backwards because that was cool.
I meant
business.
Of all the hats that I have, and you know, as I've said, I don't really like the feel of this on my head. If I'm going to wear a hat, though, maybe one of those newsboy caps would work okay, but really a ball cap's about the only thing that works. But I've got lots of different options I can wear for ball cap, tons of them. I don't have to wear this one.
You've got like a pile of them. And again, no shade, just I noticed in my head you used to sort of switch it up. And now I'm like, I keep seeing maybe, and the University of Iowa, when you say it and I remember, but that one, I mean, it's got a fucking butter cow on it. So like, I remember every time that that's what you wore the week before. And so I was just curious if like, this was your favorite now or what, but you just kind of get into a zone for a while.
Yeah. I mean, I pretty much, when I go out and I want to have to wear a hat, this is what I grab. It's at the top of the pile now or whatever, but I do like it. I mean, I just got it in August. So I'm really, really attached to it. And you know, I recently, so there's a closet where a lot of my ball caps are that's not in my room, and I realized, wow, I haven't like even looked at that closet for a really long time. So I told myself, you know what, I'm gonna go in there, I'm gonna see if I can like consolidate. I don't even know how many ball caps I have, and I might find some I ever forgot that I had. I'm pretty sure I have one that's like a who's on first type ball cap. And I think, you know, I've got like a couple, maybe Field of Dreams ball caps and stuff. And like you were saying, I could wear a different one since we're on YouTube all the time now. Maybe that would be fun, but I don't know. I mean, you know, a lot of people who are longtime listeners probably remember me coming over to your house with my red, my White Sox cap on. It was the sex hat or whatever. And they've never seen it.
We would talk about it. You couldn't see the sex hat, but yeah.
That's right. But if I wore it, they could go, oh, yeah, that does kind of look like sex.
That's a sex hat. I think because I remember a Batman cap a long time.
Oh, yeah. I wore
in fact, cap. I'm getting weird deja vu that you and I think off camera or off recording, had a talk about that's very similar to this when you had the Batman one. Because the idea that you just grabbed the first one on the pile is familiar to me. We may have talked about this. If you've got an opinion, like what kind of caps do you or what kind of hats do you want to see William wearing in this? Go to the comments on YouTube or go to the blog, themagicaltalkinghat.com. Like I said, but also YouTube comment is great. I know a lot of you, maybe most of you, at this point, consume this as a video. So feel free to comment on YouTube too. That's good. Also smash that like button.
Smash it.
Smash it. How's your week been?
Well, I went to St. Louis over the weekend with the kids and with the grandkids. Nice. It wasn't really a last minute thing, but it was a thing that I wasn't sure was gonna happen until sort of the last minute. But I've never been been through the Greyhound station in St. Louis, but I don't count that. And Abby, I don't think
that's the same way that I've been to Cleveland. Same deal.
I don't think Abby had ever been in any capacity. So to us, this was like our first time going. And this is, you know, there aren't very many places we go that's the first time we've both been there. I mean, I say that's not entirely true. I think when we went to South Dakota, neither of us had been there. But anyway, so this was going to be the first time either one of us had gone to St. Louis. And we were kind of excited about that. And we brought the kids along and the grandkid along. Saw the arch, which was amazing. I mean, pictures just don't do that thing justice. It's just something that you have to see to really appreciate it. And we went to the aquarium there. And we went to, what was the other place?
Did you go to the city museum or the kids museum or whatever? There's one that's real crazy.
Yeah. We were going to do that. But, we went to the zoo. Because the first day, the weather was so nice, we decided not to do an indoor thing. So we went to the zoo, which was really fun and interesting. And then the next day was still a nice day. But the son-in-law is a real fan of aquariums. And the grandson really likes aquariums too. So we thought, well, let's just go there. Cause we didn't even really think about the aquarium down there at all. I mean, we passed by it driving somewhere else and he saw it and he got really excited because he'd kind of forgotten that there was an aquarium down there. And we're like, well, hey, let's go there. So we did. And it was really good. So that was a fun time. We weren't there we were only there for two nights. You know, we drove down on Friday and then we did the zoo on Saturday. And then we did the aquarium on Sunday and then drove back. It's 4 hours. It's a 4 hour drive. It's kind of hard for a little kid. Yeah.
It is, but it's, I mean, it's sort of in the same vein as Minneapolis, Chicago, St. Louis. They're all, I mean, the truth is Chicago is closer to 5 hours. I think St. Louis is closer to 3.5. Maybe I drive crazy. I don't know, but it's all in that vein. St. Louis is surprisingly cool. Like St. Louis is one of those cities that's sort of the butt of all America's jokes. Des Moines actually also, and Peoria, which I get. But St. Louis has got a shit ton of stuff. We went down there sort of on a whim once and did fun stuff, but also saw all this other stuff. Like we went in the winter and a lot of stuff wasn't like open at the time because it was just like we wanted to get away from our house for a little while. And there's just a lot. I keep meaning to get back down there because there's so much going on. There's great museums. The zoo is very popular. I didn't even know about the aquarium, but that's cool.
And the historical sections and aspects are still pretty visible. That's another cool thing. Like the aquarium actually, there was a Union Station or a central station for the trains that used to go through there.
Yeah.
And the building that it used to be in, they still they're sort of the steel structure for the roof and all that is still there, and it's massive. And they have put a whole bunch of things sort of underneath it. So you go to that general area and there's shops and there's restaurants and there's aquarium and all this other stuff. And it's really cool. And there's a lot of other areas of St. Louis where a lot of the historical buildings and the historical neighborhoods are, you know, intact. So it's a, you know, a lot of cities are like that, I suppose, but I've never been to a city where, like, really still close to the main downtown area is all of this cool historical stuff. And there are other things that we didn't even get to do. Like, you know, you can take a riverboat ride, which I'd love to
do. Oh, yeah. I'm pretty sure there's one or two, maybe it's in the greater St. Louis area, but I think there's one or two pretty big, like, amusement parks.
Well, there's Six Flags. There's a Six Flags down.
I mean, that's the obvious one. But I think there's a different one because we had friends who took their kids, and I think they basically stayed at one, and I can't remember what it was now. But
we stayed at a Vrbo thing.
Oh, okay. We do a lot of Vrbo.
And that was in an historic neighborhood that was near the university there. It's just fantastic. Nice. Yeah, it was right. Really nice.
But the important part, and I probably know the answer to most of these, but the bigger thing, food. So let's go through the straightforwards. Did you have any barbecue?
No, I didn't have any barbecue.
Did anybody of you have any barbecue?
No.
Did the family have any barbecue? All right, lost out there. Did the family have any fried ravioli?
Mm-mm.
That is a very St. Louis thing.
Mm.
Did the family have any Drew's frozen custard?
Mm-mm.
You missed out there. You need to do that. That's some tasty shit. It's very popular. Did the family have any St. Louis style pizza?
Well, we did have pizza and it was fantastic, but I don't know what St. Louis style is.
It is very similar to a Midwestern in general, of the sort of tavern style, thin crust, cut into squares. The particular thing about it is it uses a cheese called Provençal cheese or something. It's a very specific kind of cheese that is to the region. And I can't remember anymore.
It wasn't cut in squares, but it was good. Oh my gosh, it was so good.
The last one, I don't even have to ask, but the best meal I ever had in my life, and therefore my favorite restaurant, is in St. Louis. Actually, right across the street from Drew's Frozen Custard. I've talked about it before. It is a Turkish restaurant called Hagia Sophia. I know you didn't go there because it's very expensive. it is not a family place, but it is a great place, and it just killer food. And lots of things like I'd had before, but not like this. Like tabbouleh, which is the bulgur wheat with the chopped parsley and everything. Normally speaking, I think of tabbouleh. I mean, it has a bunch of stuff in it, but the base of it is bulgur, and one of the garnishes is important is fresh parsley in it. The one we had there, which is apparently how it should be done, I'm gonna say was like 80% just chopped parsley leaves.
Really?
Yeah. Mm. It was like green, and it was really good. But I had a killer lamb shank. I forget what all else we had, but it was all just phenomenal. Really good.
Yeah, we had, so we ate at the zoo, so that was just like amusement park type food.
Ground up bananas.
Then we had pizza that night, which was just fantastic. Then we had lunch at the aquarium, which it was a very nice restaurant, and everyone had a great lunch, but there wasn't anything regional about it.
And then
we kind of skipped supper on the way home, I think, but yeah, it was fun. I mean, I would go there again. So Minneapolis is a place that Abby and I have both gone to. I think that's probably another city that the first time we went, we were together when we went there.
Most theaters per capita of any city in the U.S.
We met Jazz there, and I think that's the first time, because she was at a conference there. And so I think the first time either of us had been in Minneapolis was to go up and see her. And we saw Neil Gaiman up there.
Oh.
And yeah, that's where I asked him that question about, you know, what inspired him to write stories about mythic you know, characters, because that seemed to be a theme in his stuff.
And he was like, leave me alone.
Kind of, yeah. Like, oh, there's no pattern here. I just write whatever I feel like. It's like, yeah, but there is a pattern. I mean, everybody could see it. You're telling me that, I don't know.
He didn't want you to become a famous writer like him. He didn't want to give away.
I mean, he wasn't rude or anything. It just sounded like he
hadn't given it any thought.
I guess, which is fair, which is totally fair.
People can have
totally
patterns fair. And not have considered them.
That's totally fair, but I was still surprised.
You did remind me, Jazz, did you have the steak or did you have what I think were the lamb chops? Facebook popped up a photo at me recently of Jazz having dinner with some friends, and it was one of those half booth, half table things, and they had all crowded into the booth side for the picture, and she was one of the ones on the end. So I know one of the plates that was sitting there by itself must have been hers. So there was a steak and there was lamb chops. I don't know. Based on positioning, I would guess the steak, but it looked fun with some friends of hers. I don't know who they are.
Also this week we played that Hunt a Killer game that's episodic.
Oh, the new one that you got. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. And we have one left, but there's six different episodes. We've done five, and I mean, I'm sure the sixth one will be just like the other five. So here's what I will say about it. It's pretty much like the thing that you got me, except there's more stuff. And they're organized in episodes. But the thing is, the episodes, and to answer a question you asked, there is sort of a goal to each episode, like a thing that you have to like send a fake email to them about guessing.
Oh,
you're eliminating suspects. So, well, give me a name of the person you think you can eliminate at the end of each episode, basically. So,
but it's interactive in the sense that you have to send it.
Right.
It's not so just an envelope. That's cool.
Right. So you send this email. What I mean, the email can just have the name in it. But if you want to be clever, can say, oh, I think I figured it out. And as long as
my
you
put the full, dear concern. Yeah.
As long as you put the full name of the person somewhere in the email, you'll get an email back saying, oh, yeah, that makes sense because of blah, 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 blah. Thanks for doing that.
So it's a bot. All right. That makes sense. Yeah. Too. It'd be weird if it wasn't actually.
So, but other than that, other than it organized in the episodes, and each episode has a thing, there's lots of things in each episode that is not really relevant to the goal of that episode. But it's going to be relevant to the end.
I like that whole idea. It feels very immersive that way.
Right.
You're doing a bunch of mysteries sort of, but they're all in an arc and they're all in the same genre, the same world.
Right.
That sounds cool.
And some of the stuff in each box, like I said,
three episodes ago, this guy, I don't know if this fits. Like,
right.
You probably get a sense of characters more and stuff.
Exactly. And place. Character and place. That's really cool. Because this takes
place. We're talking about the difference between like a movie versus a TV series in a way.
Exactly. That's exactly right. So in many ways, it's better. First of all, there's just more stuff, and that's better. But also the way it's kind of organized is kind of fun. I wouldn't. So just to fill people in, if they don't know, Hunt a Killer, I think it sort of bills itself originally as a subscription service where you get these individual things in the mail, literally individually.
Yeah.
But of course, since they make these in six episode, whatever, you can just buy the whole thing too and binge it, so to speak. And then they have these one shots, and then they have, like you were saying, other things like books and simpler things and whatever. I don't think it would be as fun to get them one at a time in the mail. I think that would be really frustrating for me. Other people maybe.
I could see the frustration. I don't think I go so far as to be not as fun. I can see benefits in different ways, but I would also find it potentially frustrating. But it's the same way as we generally don't watch a show until an entire season is out.
And then sort of binge it. Well,
but there's also an argument for not binging it. People like to be able to spend a week thinking about it and stuff.
Well, also I think someone who gets them in the mail and then the next one's not sent until after you finish it or whatever, I think that might give them the feeling of I'm working on a real case, you know, that's gradually unfolding.
Oh, So it's not on, it's not once a month. It's, it triggers once you, that's cool. I like that. I like that.
Yeah.
I thought it was just like every month we send you one. No,
no,
it's a, you can, it's at your pace essentially.
That's right. So there's two things. There's two ways it can happen. You can actually request the next one to come like whenever you want.
Yeah.
Or it'll automatically come when you're done, you know? And I think that does make people feel like they're working on a real case over a period of time. Yeah. And that is kind of fun, I suppose, but I think it would frustrate me. Like we,
I think I would purchase the way you did. I think I would.
Yeah. Because we did like one or one and a half every night for a while. And that by itself was frustrating because sometimes, okay. So sometimes you solve a cipher, which is really fun to solve a cipher, but to actually do the cipher can be really tedious. Like, oh, now I know what to do. Oh, but this is a 2-page letter. We have to go through and solve for everything. And that's fine. It's not like it doesn't ruin it or anything, but if you've only got 2 or 3 hours each night to dedicate, you'll spend a whole hour of that just, you know, doing one thing. And there's like 8 things that you want to get to and read and think about. So I think what I would do is like what, this one shot thing that you got me, I would like set aside a Sunday or whatever. And that would be like, I could do in a morning or an afternoon with Abby, but this other thing it would take all day. And I don't think if I got anything like this again, that I would do it during the week. I think in any case, if I got this one shot or an episodic one, either way, I'd say, let's clear Sunday so we can do this. And then this one would only take, say, the morning or the evening, whichever I picked. And that one would take like most of the day. And that would be really fun. Super fun.
It's good that that's the flexibility, though.
Yeah.
I like that they've done that.
And I'm really looking forward to doing the ones that are more difficult because these are really fun, but they're not, I mean, they're not hard. I mean, you know, they're pretty easy. But they're still fun. I think I would also have fun though being challenged a little more and having red herrings and things like that. And the little stuff they include, the little objects they include are actually pretty fun and pretty, they do add something to it. But yeah, this was really great. I really appreciate you introducing me to this because I think I'm going to have a lot of fun with this.
I'm real glad it worked out.
I recommend it to anybody. It's just Hunt a Killer, right? Not Hunting a Killer.
Hunt a Killer, yes. I know. Yeah, Hunt a Killer. Because up until yesterday, I was on their mailing list. So I kept getting emails from Hunt a Killer about a new. I'm like, shut up.
But anyway,
if I want your stuff. I'm going to come to your site.
How was your week?
It was okay. It wasn't so great for other people. My mother in law. Remember when my mother-in-law fell down the stairs and broke every single thing of her body?
Oh, yeah.
Well, she fell down again. Not like that. Oh.
Okay.
But she fell down, this time breaking her right shoulder and her left wrist.
Oh, gosh.
Well, the worst part of it is, so my mother and father-in-law live in Illinois, but as longtime listeners will know, they have a vacation rental in Virginia Beach, which is where we go every summer for a week or two. But there are times, usually in the winter and the fall in particular, where nobody rents it because it's not the time when people rent property there. And so it is not uncommon for them to go and just stay there themselves, like over the winter and stuff, and then they'll come back for holidays and stuff like that. And they also like to be there in the winter because that is when their two granddaughters who live in South Carolina have birthdays. So they like to be there. So then it's a quick drive down. And I mean, they go and stay for a few days, but it's not driving cross country. So my mother-in-law was staying with her son in South Carolina when this fall happened. So after the prompt care followed by the ER and everything, the son had to drive them back to Virginia. And then the next day, he drove them all the way back to Illinois.
Oh, boy.
And then flew back because his kid had a concert he wanted to see. But And all the family was like, okay, what are we going to do? Who needs to be on what duty and everything? And at first it was a little panicky. It's not nearly as bad. And I think there was a little bit of a reactive answer to the last, because last time she straight up probably should have died. But this one is just, you know, it sucks because both your arms are compromised. But they got a lift chair so she can get up in and out of that. And she's had one doctor's appointment about the shoulder, and next week she'll have another. So that's all kind of working out.
Mm.
And then also where my wife works, there was a very unexpected and vaguely still unexplained death amongst not somebody that my wife was close with, but a coworker in the same area. And so A, that was very hard on her, and B, she's a manager trying to help everybody else who it's very hard on. And so that's been crazy for her, and that's felt really rough. But yeah, my week's been pretty chill, except, you know, helping her out with that. I don't think there's a lot else. Did we watch a movie? Oh, I did. We did watch a movie last weekend that I wanted to speak on. It's called The Wild Wedding. Wild is spelled with an E at the end. W-I-L-D-E. It is a 2017 drama comedy. About a movie star with a large family is about to marry her fifth husband. And so all the families come to stay for the weekend leading up to the wedding at her fancy big beach house, including her first husband, who they have remained friends, and he's been there through all of this stuff. And the movie star is played by Glenn Close. The original first husband is played by John Malkovich. And the new soon-to-be husband with hair in a very disconcerting way is Patrick Stewart. Minnie Driver's also in it, and a British actor who I recognize, but I don't know his name, and a bunch of other people I didn't know, because it's a big family. It's a big sort of ensemble film. And it's one of those, you know, hijinks ensue. There's various jealousies. Exes are there at the same time because of, like, you know, some of the younger generations have split up, but they're there for the wedding and all of this thing. Somebody accidentally does drugs and it's silly, you know, all the usual sort of tropes. And it's not good. Here's what I will say. It is solidly mediocre. It is solidly fine for basically one reason.
Okay.
The cast, mostly those three, but a few of the other ones who I didn't know, but who did it, are the sort that have such talent that even when they are clearly phoning it in, as all of them were, they can't help but be kind of still good at it.
Yeah, yeah.
Without that, if you didn't have actors that were essentially sort of incapable of giving a bad performance, it would have been nigh unwatchable. And I don't get it. The whole vibe for me, you know how like Adam Sandler has this thing now where he just gets his friends and they travel to some exotic locale and have a vacation and film part of it, and we call it a movie, and Netflix puts it on and it's very popular?
Yeah, I've heard about that, yeah.
Yeah, this feels like Patrick Stewart and John Malkovich and Glenn Close just like decided to do this. It has that feel. And don't get me wrong, I'm sure it's way better than the Adam Sandler movies. I haven't watched any of them on my jam, but it's, yeah. It was very disappointing.
That's too bad.
So I wouldn't recommend that. I'm back to watching a Dimension 20 actual play D&D thing called A Crown of Candy. And it's set in a fictional world with different kingdoms where the people are food-based and all of our players are focused on Candia, the candy kingdom. So we have the Pop Rocks king and his caramel wife and their children who are licorice and I think cinnamon candy respectfully, and the chancellor's a chocolate bunny and the head of the guard is an armored gummy bear. This whole thing. And it's pretty good. I'm enjoying it. I really like that. Dimension 20 is a good show. Dropout is a good streaming service in general. If you're somebody who likes gaming and or who likes improv, Dropout is a really good streaming service. I enjoy it a lot. Or if you're somebody who liked recent years of college humor also, because it's the same people. It's a good time. I think that's about it though. Let's do some email. I know, okay. Wild, right? Let's do it. Oh. Nope, I lied. Because first we gotta do this. And we didn't talk about this last week, but you and I owed each other some books. And we finally, when we went to do the beef run, did it. And so now I have the cheese making book.
Blessed are the cheese makers.
I have not read it yet, but I have gone through it to be like, what the hell is going on? And you can make all the cheeses pretty much. Like, there's 75 recipes in here. But, like, name a cheese. And don't go easy. Name something out there a little bit.
Roquefort.
I'm pretty sure that's in here. Blue cheeses. There's a variety of blue cheeses in here.
I don't even remember what Roquefort cheese is.
It's a type of blue cheese.
Oh, okay. I didn't know.
But, like, you can make paneer. There's, like, 8 different cream cheeses. There's a bunch of goat cheeses, all the basic obvious ones, cheddar. There's actually 3 or 4 different cheddars, a couple of Swisses, Gouda, of course, Havarti, I'm pretty sure. There's not Edam. That's the only one I've noticed is missing, but Emmental is in there, so I'm happy about that. I mean, it's just a couple different versions of Parmesan, 2 or 3 different mozzarellas, like all the cheeses.
Like, so, but like soft goat cheeses, base, like semi-soft, feta.
Hard. Blue, is, all of it.
Is feta in there like a goat?
Feta's in here. Feta's also in here.
Wow.
Yeah. Huh. Halloumi's in here. I'm excited about that too. Halloumi, we don't do so much in this part of the world, but I've kind of wanted to.
I don't know if you remember, because it's been so long, but you talked about wanting to make cheese, and that's why Mick.
I know, and that's how this happened. Yeah. I know.
Gave it to me like a year ago.
And this seems like I'm pretty confident I'm going to use it. And it's a very good book. The starting part is just talking about like the basics of how cheese gets made and how you'll want to do it and things to watch out for. And then it's just like a shit ton of recipes. And then the back is a huge section on like good ways to cook with cheese or the best ways to eat cheese and pair them with things and stuff. So
this is
there's a lot going on here. I'm very excited.
Good.
It's one of those that like there are so many things like you can do at home, like kombucha, that I'm like, nah. But I also get nervous with that kind of stuff, and I get nervous with this too, but it seems doable, and making cheese is something I would definitely do at home. So like that's gonna happen. I got a lot going on at the moment, but it's gonna happen.
I was a little afraid there. So there was a period of time there where I still had it here at home and I kept forgetting to give it to you, where your diet changed, and I thought, oh, now I'm going to give him this book and he can't even do anything with it because he won't be able to eat anything that he makes. But I mean, you've kind of come around to it.
I've come around to I do what I want. And what I want is to make cheese.
That's kind of exciting. Whenever I see you get excited to do something, it makes me excited because I really am interested to know how it turns out and if you really enjoy doing it or whatever else.
I could, like, every once in a while, you get people who like homebrew or whatever, like, I could do that. I could get into that. I could become a homebrew guy, or I could become a, you know, bread makers. That's another one, especially because of COVID. I'm like, I could get into that. And I just never bother. But, like, fucking cheese? Yeah. Also, I don't remember if I mentioned this. We finally bought, remember how my wife sort of, all my birthday presents were sort of wok cooking themed?
Yeah.
And one of it was I was going to get a wok, but she didn't buy it because she's like, there's options. You should wait. Well, we finally figured it out and we bought one and we got it. And just yesterday, I finally seasoned it.
Oh, yeah.
Which is the most annoying thing with pans ever. And you can buy preseason ones. There's reasons why we didn't in this case or whatever. And I did it. It took a long part of yesterday off and on in places, but it is seasoned. And tonight I will be making my first stir fry in it. I'm very excited.
Fantastic.
I was so dragging my feet on seasoning it that I've actually cooked in a wok since we got it. And I just used the old shitty wok because I couldn't bother. But now, real stuff. So I'm very excited about that. I did tell my wife she's going to be watching stuff with her sister in the back Thursday nights. That's what they do. And I said, like, I'm going to be cooking out here. And I've got my metal curved spatula and I got my new cool wok. And so I'm going to be ching the noise. So I'm pretty sure I'm going to be yelling really racist faux Chinese things. Like I'm imitating some. So I just want you to be prepared. You're going to hear that. I'm sorry, but it's probably going to. My bad. It's not a good thing, but that's how it's going to be. And smart enough, not going to give any examples.
Okay, good. Self-awareness is really good.
Be racist in the privacy of your own home. It's fine. Whatever. All right, let's do an email. This is from Jazz. Big beef or possibly lamb eater. Jazz. All right. Jazz elevates our show way more than it deserves.
Yeah, she's like the Sir Alec Guinness of the podcast.
In that one time she paid you £20 to go away?
No. In that Star Wars would be total trash without him.
Come on, that's great, though, because you're basically the Mark Hamill of our podcast. And Alec Guinness literally did once pay Mark Hamill £20 to go away. I like to think I'm a little bit both Carrie Fisher and Harrison Ford, mostly in that I do not give a shit anymore and I'm often on drugs. It kind of works. And we can split the other ones too. Like you're 3PO, I'm clearly R2. Addy is probably Chewbacca.
That works, sure.
All right. Anyway, I bring this up because not for the first time, Jazz's email references Noam Chomsky.
Oh, has she done that before?
She has. Maybe she's done it in a comment on the blog, but I've definitely seen her talk about Chomsky before.
Okay.
The subject of this is Chomsky's assessment of ChatGPT. Oh my God. We're topical for once. I mean, ChatGPT is the hot topic lately. All right, here we go. I don't know if either of you got a chance to read Noam Chomsky's recent op-ed on the difference between human and machine intelligence /learning. I'm sorry, Jeff, have we met? I get you think he might. Maybe she was trying to be polite by including me. But if you thought for a second that I read Noam Chomsky's recent op-ed on the difference between human and machine intelligence and learning, you should stop listening to the podcast, because after 12 years, you still have not figured me out in the slightest.
I didn't know he wrote one. I would love to read it. My first exposure to Chomsky was as a linguist. I didn't really know him as a social commentator for a long time. I just thought, oh, he's that linguist. So I'd be actually interested in this op-ed, but I didn't know there was one.
Here are a few of the contrasts he draws.
Oh, okay.
AI is primarily about description and prediction. Human intelligence consists, quote, not only of creative conjectures, but also of creative criticism. Human style thought is based on possible explanations and error correction, a process that gradually limits what possibilities can be rationally considered, end quote. He also points out that human reasoning can use ethical principles in order to consider what ought or ought not to be done. First, I wonder what you think of these contrasts. And second, if you have time, we don't, here's something I thought of in relation to that contrast. It seems to me that more and more our educational system is geared towards teaching humans to think more in the way that Chomsky describes as machine intelligence and less in the way that he describes as human intelligence. What do you think? Oh, so this isn't about ChatGPT at all, except tangentially. This is just about machine learning versus human learning in general. Which I'm glad about, because everybody's fucking talking about, one of our listeners has been working heavily with ChatGPT and similar things for years, and now it's suddenly a thing. But I know super little about it. I mean, this seems like something you're going to have a stronger take on than I am. So, do it.
Well, first of all, when it comes to linguistics and understanding human cognition based on that, Chomsky's really good. I don't really know how to comment. I mean, without reading the whole thing, you know, just based on what Jazz has presented, I mean, that contrast seems to make sense to me. He's got a very rich and nuanced understanding of these things. I mean, I'm not sure. I don't remember everything that I used to read from him. So I don't know if I can comment at length on his ideas or what I agree with or don't agree with. But as far as how Jazz has presented that, I mean, that seems reasonable to me. But I also would agree with her assessment about education. And the example I would use, which is something I wanted to bring up with you before, this came up a week or so ago. I was watching a film critic, and they were talking about how the Screenwriters Guild released a statement about these new technologies and how they approved of them. They thought they were good, and they were giving recommendations to their members, their, you know, basically a screenwriters union, right? Members, about how this can work for you. This isn't going to put you out of work or whatever. This is a tool you can use for these things. And one of the things they suggested was that screenwriters use technologies like this to create a first draft,
mm-hmm, mm-hmm,
and then polish it up. This film critic was completely like offended by this notion. Didn't like it at all. Thought it was terrible. I didn't really form an opinion on whether or not it was like ethically, morally good or whatever this film critic was saying. But what I thought was, and I think it speaks a little bit to what Jazz is saying, and I'm interested in your take on it, and Jazz, everybody's take, really. But I was going to bring it up to you specifically. The fact of the matter is, the film studios for a long time have wanted their screenwriters to basically write scripts that sort of tap into a sort of a four quadrant zeitgeist kind of, yep, thing, right? Mm-hmm. They don't want, mm-hmm, you showing up with, oh, I'm going to do some slice of life or the story of my mom struggling with Alzheimer's. No. They want you to figure out what's going to make $1 billion. And the reason they're like that, you and I have often lamented them being like that, but the fact of the matter is, those films do make $1 billion, right? That they do make $1 billion. I mean, look at all of the Marvel movies. I'm sorry, but maybe with the exception of Iron Man, every single Marvel movie could have been first draft written by the newest version of ChatGPT and then polished up by somebody. I'm telling you, that's the truth. Oh, yeah. So basically, what ChatGPT can do as a first draft is what studios have wanted for at least a decade, two decades maybe, have wanted their writers to do. And so it seems to me that ChatGPT could totally write a good first draft. You could get someone to come in and polish it up so it doesn't sound like a ChatGPT first draft. And that would save a ton of time and money and make $1 billion pictures. I mean, it would make $1 billion pictures. I'm not saying that's good or bad. I'm just saying that seems to be the reality of it to me. And the way I think it speaks to what Jazz is saying is, I don't think it's just Hollywood that feels this way. I think it's lots of things. And speaking as someone who's in graduate school, and I only, you know, 3 years of graduate school, and I've only got one to go, I can tell you a lot of the things I'm asked to write, the first draft could easily be written by ChatGPT, and then I could go in and clean it up and put in citations and stuff. That's just a fact. And that's why a lot of students are using this technology to cheat on papers and things. So, you know, So I think Jazz is right. I think a lot of education is teaching this way because a lot of employers and a lot of standards boards, like the one I have to live up to, this is how they work. I mean, what they want, what Hollywood wants from scriptwriters, what the standards board wants from graduate students writing papers, what employers want from middle managers in their reports, they're all things that a ChatGPT could write. I mean, didn't the most recent version pass the bar? Yeah, I think the most recent version passed the bar.
No. A company was founded on the idea that they were going to do that, and it doesn't yet work.
Okay.
There was a company that was literally around for a couple of years. An Elon Musk type was like, here's what we're going to do, and was doing, well, straight up illegal shit, trying to get an AI lawyer in front of a Supreme Court case, and was going to great and terrible lengths to try and make that happen. Not quite there yet,
but the seeds are there. Yeah, that's kind of the direction they're going. And the thing is, I think it's a long time now, and some of my conversations with Jazz has sort of informed this opinion, that schools are really moving toward whatever they think the job market wants, and the job market standards for what they want people to be able to do, you know, the standards are not very high. And that's why I saw a report just today. Someone was saying that, you know, they thought that in the more recent versions of these chat technologies can do a lot of jobs that are just writing basic reports or writing things that are just based on basic knowledge that most people are going to get from Googling stuff or whatever. There's just a lot of things that the workforce does what their employers want is basically what these technologies do. Yeah. You don't need a person to do it. I think what Jazz is saying is kind of right.
What I don't disagree either, except I maybe disagree that I don't like it, because I think I might be okay with it. To speak to your idea of AI as screenwriting, I mean, I basically have already seen this. Not quite, but years ago, I watched sketches, comedy sketches, that were literally written by AI bots, and they were clearly not normal. They were weird, but they were eerily in line with the sketches I had seen by these human people that they had written before, such that they were a perfect first draft. Like, mm-hmm. There's shit that didn't quite work, but if they had sat down and like taken it and been like, okay, we'll, you know, change the words and the syntax and shit, absolutely. So this was a while back, so that's definitely a thing that could happen. I can't speak to what people are being taught now very much, because it's been a long time since I have learned anything or anyone has tried to teach me, and I'm grateful for that. I can speak just a little bit, and I have to be careful on this because my boss listens to this, so she can totally come out and be like, you took that out of your ass. But based on my previous career, I can speak slightly to what educators, not necessarily, you know, departments of education, but literal teachers and things, want to teach at this point. And in particular, in later secondary and in post-secondary education, there is a push, and I'm very much in favor of this, to not teaching things so much as teaching how you can learn things.
Sure.
So not necessarily remembering facts and figures and things like that, but remembering how to critically examine things and how to do research and how to formulate arguments and things like that.
Right.
And in a broader sense, outside of just AI, but in the sense of machine assistance, I do witness this coming up because I have nibblings who are in school who suck at spelling.
Mm.
And when the parents of said nibblings go to the teachers and say, how do we solve this? They say, we don't really care if they can spell now because they've got things that'll do it for them. And on the one hand, as somebody who is very fond of words and is a pretty good speller and all this, like, part of me is like, oh no. But like on a non-personal level, makes sense. There's aspects of this arithmetic at this point. You kind of don't need arithmetic because it's all over the place. And to the degree that people who are in professional mathematical careers that I know are kind of shitty at arithmetic. They can do the higher math functions, but adding, subtracting, dividing, multiplying, they all fuck it up sometimes. And they know that, so they have things calculated for them. The only real issue I see in all of this, mostly what we're not talking about replacing humans, in my opinion. We are talking about replacing bureaucracy. In the sense that there are bureaucratic jobs that now, like the middle points in things, like you're still going to need the person to come up with the idea. You're still going to need the person to polish the idea, but the shit in the middle where you're just, like you say, the first draft isn't there anymore. Or won't be necessarily things in an actual bureaucratic structure. Somebody's still going to need to make the decisions and do the designing and do the leadership and do the management and all this. But I'm going to take your form and I'm going to figure out if you qualify or not. And then I'm going to send it where it needs to go. Yeah, you can have somebody else do that. And everybody laments, well, not everybody, but people always lament automation. Mm-hmm. And I do understand from our current economic model, this does suck because it legitimately can put people out of jobs. But I would argue they are unnecessary jobs. And if it weren't in a situation where you got to prove your worth in a job to get a paycheck or else you basically don't get to live, this wouldn't be a problem. So if you didn't have to have an income, nobody would care about this. People would be happy about this. And I think this is my socialist argument again. If we make a requirement of survival that you need an income, then if we take away sources of income, that's bad. But we have a lot of things out there that are sources of income just because people need sources of income, not because they are actually necessary or useful. And burgeoning technologies are going to get rid of that stuff. It's already the case. There's already technologies that when we invented machines for them, there are people who used to, I mean, there's still migrant farm work, but there's a lot of farm work that used to be done by hand that now is done by big machines. And strictly speaking, those people don't have jobs anymore. I mean, those people are dead. This was centuries ago, but you know. It does force a redefining of our economic and social structure. I will admit that. But you were speaking to the teaching of it, trying to teach people to essentially be drones for the AI.
What I was speaking to was I think I'm also saying, like, you know, I'm on the same page with everything you just said. But I think I'm also saying that some of the jobs that would be replaced by this technology are really dreary, crappy jobs. I mean, they don't have to be, but I don't think, you know, for example, writing the first draft of a billion-dollar four-quadrant movie, I mean, that's not, you know, you're not, you as a script writer probably want to shoot yourself in the head writing this piece of trash.
That's not because what it's you like, dreamed of doing when you.
No, that's not why you became a script writer, to write something that you have no passion for, that doesn't speak to you at all, that you're not even putting any creativity to. You're like reading other scripts that are billion-dollar scripts and figuring out how to copy. I mean, there might be some creativity there, so it doesn't, but not much. You know what I mean? It's like,
yeah,
the
yeah.
the fact that this technology can do
and this, it's again, it's the in-between step. There is creativity in having come up with the idea in the first place.
Sure, sure.
The first draft. Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, so.
But I mean, even in other industries, like, you know, I've worked in a lot of places. And I've had an opportunity. I've worked at many levels, including being a manager. And in every single place I've ever worked and at every single level I've ever worked, there is room for creativity to say, hey, this process can be improved. Hey, we can do this. Hey, we can do that. Or there's a different way of reporting this to my superiors so that they can have a better understanding and insight into what's going on. But I can tell you that was never welcomed. Ever. I mean, you know, I could even argue this, if you do this, this will save $1 million a year. I have quantified it. Because that's what you're told to do, right? Tell them how much money it'll save. Still, not welcome. In general, for decades now, the businesses in the United States, across all verticals, across all things, kind of want people to just come in, keep their head down, and do their job, which is usually a job that the way they define it, could you have creativity? This person could be being creative and increasing productivity and reducing costs without you having to lay people off, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. But nobody wants you to do that. And what the job ends up being is something that these new technologies can do, and which is a drudgery job that it doesn't have to be, but it usually is.
Yeah, and it's good to replace these kind of shitty, tedious drudge jobs.
Right.
As long as then the alternative isn't now you go live in a box. And far too often that is the case in the current model.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. Well,
because the need for personnel within that specific area of work is decreased. If you redefine things such that you use those human resources elsewhere, awesome. That's not what a lot of them do. They just get rid of them.
But what that means is that before these people were replaced, as I was saying, most of these jobs could be more creative, and they could solve problems, and they could increase productivity, and all this other stuff. If you replace them with automation, that automation will do the job the way the people at the top want it done, for sure. But there's no room for improvement anymore.
Yeah.
And the other thing I was making a comment about was, since this conformist drone-like behavior is what employers want, I think that some education does move toward making people more conformist and drone-like.
I would agree. Now, I would agree.
What you're talking about, though, where they're saying, well, we want to help people know how to think. I mean, I think that's a good direction to go for the future, because, I mean, a lot of people are talking about how, oh my gosh, you know, like you said, kids don't know how to spell or all this other stuff. But it's been pointed out to me that, you know, I don't know how to subsistence farm, right? There's stuff. I mean, as we can progress, we all lose skills that
previous generations thought were integral and crucial.
Right.
And also, if you're teaching people this kind of stuff, if somebody's in a situation where they do need to spell, they have the tools to teach themselves how to spell.
Right. But what you're talking about is education moving more toward, all right, well, now that computers are doing this, well, let's just really double down on what we can teach kids to do that machine learning still can't do, which is all the stuff that you were talking about.
Yeah, yeah.
And I think that's good.
And just redefining the model. The technology is cool. Yeah. What the technology can do is cool, but there's a lag. In that I'm to make up a hypothetical name, Jeff Bezos. No, Willie Wright, extreme jackass billionaire.
Yeah,
Willie Wright is like, I'm running my company. I'm making tons of money because capitalism is fucked. I am making billions and I'm paying these people 15 cents an hour to do all this shit. What's that? You've got a piece of software that will do the things all the 15 cent an hour people are doing, and I don't have to pay it after obviously the initial cost of getting it. Cool. Now I have this. See you later, 15 cent an hour people. Go die on the streets. Now, over time, we come up with new things. We are currently in a version of that that's already proven corrupt and fucked up of the Ubers of the world and the hunter killers of the world. We're finding new niches, and unfortunately, the people with the capital are taking them over and just screwing everything again. But it's another brick. At this point, the people with the money and the power, if they are told this AI will do the things your employees are doing currently without you having to pay your employees, they won't think, great, now I can put my employees on this other cool new thing. They'll think, great, now I can kick those fuckers out and not have to pay them. And that is a problem that just requires a socioeconomic change of model. And I mean, either it happens or we turn into a sci-fi dystopia. And from what I can tell of history, it's coin flip, which will happen each iteration. Sometimes we get more creative and interesting. Sometimes we get more dystopic. And so we're in a weird mishmash. But yeah, so what it can do is cool. What it might lead to is also cool. But what it might lead to other ways is terrible. And so I don't know. We are over time. Please, this is a fascinating topic. Please go to the blog or just comment in YouTube your feelings on this. Why do you think Noam Chomsky hates the poor so much? Just so much. How much money do you think Jazz would be willing to pay to get William to leave her alone? And also, can I lend it to her? I mean, listen again next week, because this is what we do. So let's just close this out with the immortal words of Boy George. Loving would be easy if your colors were like my dreams, red, gold, and green. See you next week. That last part was just me.
Yet another mystery solved by the hosts of the Magical Talking Hat. Do you have a question that begs to be answered? Then please write the hat at themagicaltalkinghat@gmail.com. That's themagicaltalkinghat@gmail.com. Also, visit the hat at themagicaltalkinghat.com. The music for this episode was provided by Kevin MacLeod of Incompetech.com.